Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and on the line I've got our Mayor Jackie Church. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, listeners.
So we want to talk about, the Three Waters thing at the moment. Everyone kind of knows the history. There was a lot of fuss around it before the election and around the election, and promises to undo what the previous government had done. And it was quite a while before we found out what the new government wanted to do. And from my perspective, it looks like the costs have been put back on the council, or the councils around the country. Is that kind of how you're seeing it as well?
Yes, absolutely. And actually had a meeting about a month, around field days, so not, you know, time goes on so fast, doesn't it, Aaron? Yeah. With Simeon Brown, and just said, you know, really, we really need support of government, because otherwise we're going to end up being what I feel is collateral damage in terms of just government and the waters, perhaps just focusing on the big cities like Auckland or Hamilton, Tauranga, and Wellington. So, yeah, you know, we really need that support, particularly where we are in the middle of a growth triangle, as we are with the rapid growth on a small ratepayer base around waters.
Yeah, is it harder for our council because we're basically a rural council with about seven or so different little towns everywhere?
Sure, we're probably like really complex. And I guess some good things around it, our council has been on that waters journey for closer to 10 years than five.
Yeah.
And we're really, and obviously brought the communities along, as you say, with Raglan. And that's a good thing, because I feel that there's talk of councils around the country that possibly we feel they haven't actually gone very far on that journey in terms of understanding their own infrastructure. And some of them don't even have meters for their water, you know, their fresh water, for example. So we're a long way ahead on the track of understanding our assets and our waters and our implications. We've had a really good contract with Watercare in the past, but we actually are only, of our 90,000 roughly people, we've got about 36,000 ratepayers as a whole who get general rate general rated. But there's only about 14,000 of our ratepayers that actually pay for our waters.
Oh, because everybody else is in the country.
Yeah, because we've got obviously that rural and provincial, so they've got a lot of rural or lifestyle blocks where they're doing their own waters. And so but we've got, as you said, there's lots of communities that we've got, small towns and hamlets that we've got wastewater treatment plants and potable drinking water plants. And we've got a trickle feed system down around Hamilton as well. So we've got quite complex network of drinking water and wastewater spread over places, nearly the same size as Auckland Super City. Because Auckland Super City, basically, they've got touching 1.82 million people, most of which are ratepayers to the waters for them, and so they're all contributing. Whereas there's only less than half of our people are contributing to those costs, but it's a lot more complex in terms of the so many plants. So yeah, we know a lot about them. We know the complexities, but we've also been implicated by, you know, the growth.
So
we're ready for growth, but we can't give it. Can't really supply waters to people who really need it.
Yeah. So I'm sort of seeing it like the councils have been left to work together as best they can. But I mean, does Hamilton City want to work with us when they probably view us as a bit of a liability?
Yeah. Well, I always reiterate, and I think I believe this. Just like our Raglan or our Waikato District Council is the jewel in our crown, you know, and always will be, in my opinion, okay, and a focus for us, and it's important. Also, Hamilton, for our whole Waikato region, is the mainstay of our region, and I believe that because we boundary them, that there's a good symbiotic relationship between us, and that we should be supportive, and I'm absolutely 100% supportive of that relationship, okay? And I think that they have that too, because our future proof works really well in terms of Manamata Piakau, Waipa Hamilton and Waikato District Council working really collaboratively and really upping the ante for the future. But that's a region where we're the growth districts, councils within the big region of the 11 of us. So that's really important to know these relationships. But coming back to the waters, it is complex because, as you say, government has basically said, you guys go and work it out. It's really under your place. Work together, kumbaya, and that. What we've done is our district council, we've probably got five or six different scenarios, all of which we're investigating at the same time, for ourselves personally, and keeping an open and adaptive philosophy about assessing these to make sure that we're open to any opportunities to make the best viable option as we go down the track further. So rather than going, okay, we're going to pick a winner, straight up and go down that track. Because for us, two things are going on. We had a really good and robust contract with Watercare, but then they've decided to divorce us. So I've actually said to the ministers, it's a 30-year contract. We're 3 years into it. We're just about the stage where we'd actually done a resolution in council to ask them to go to the next stage of the existing contract, which was for them to do the invoicing of waters for us, so as just a process and efficiency status. On the same week that they were sending us divorce papers, was what I call it. Now, I've gone back to government and said, well, you think of me like the Catholic wife, because I don't believe in divorce. And there must be a simple way for us, because we're already aligned with Watercare. The Watercare plants, both their potable drinking water and their wastewater treatment plants in North Waikato, are actually in Tuakau. They're actually in our area. Their dams, who supply most of the majority of the water for Auckland, are in the Hunua Ranges, which is in the Waikato, which is in our Waikato District Council. So we have their physical assets. Oh. We've got a 30-year contract. We've had a really fantastic relationship, progressive and working well together. We've got a unique team, almost separate from Watercare, but aligned to them, that works for the Waikato District Council. So tickety-boo, everything's in aligning with another council. Everything's in place. You want us to work with another council, we already are. Our systems and our software are the same. We've upgraded our software to be in line in the grade. So, everything is in place, and yet, for some reason, they don't want us to be separate into Auckland just to be on their own.
So,
the government says one thing, but then they're doing the other.
Who controls Watercare, though? Like, whose decision is that?
Well, Watercare is a CCO of Auckland City Council.
Yep.
It's a council-controlled organisation of Auckland City Council now. And Auckland City Council, it wants to probably focus on themselves, but I've asked the ministers, saying, well, from a strategic point from Aotearoa NZ Inc.,
yep.
when we have to look above, we're 5 million people in the tiny little motus in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. We have to get over these boundary things. Mm. What strategically is the best for New Zealand? Now, if they're saying that we should be working together collaboratively in councils, we're saying we're already doing that. We're sharing resources. We're sharing the assets. We've got a contract that's working. And we've got a software that's working. Why don't you just leave that alone? And basically, as government's doing, which, is quite good, they're making big decisions and they're ticking boxes and saying, we'll do it this way, we'll do it that way, whether we like it or not. So, tick that box and say, Watercare, please just keep that contract going, at least for the next 2 or 3 or 5 years until this is a bit more unpacked. Because that would be.
Are they going to do that? Though, is the government going to direct Watercare to do that?
Well, that's what I asked. Okay, because that's a simple short or medium or long term solution to what. Because something's already working and not broken, and it's aligning, and it also means that, to me in my head, it was also means that we could then segue into aligning with Hamilton and or Waipa and or Otahonga and. Using us as a segue into the Waikato so that the amalgamation of the waters could become a bigger CCO over time. As the councils, we're ready to do that, right? So we would be the red carpet into it. And the other part of it, which is interesting for us in Waikato Tainui, because we're so aligned with Waikato Tainui and their aspirations as well, is that Waikato Tainui's arohi, or the boundaries of it, actually goes right up into into the Auckland Museum. So we think of our territory boundaries being, say, the top of the Bombay Hills. Their area is quite well into Auckland. So, again, in terms of mana whenua and waters, we are very aligned on the fact of trying to work together and forgetting about your territorial boundaries is another way of perspective.
But it does feel like the government wants to be hands-off on that issue, though.
Yeah, but I guess, it's not a no until never. I guess of one of those tranches, that's the simplest and easiest. So I've just said to them, look, if you want to help us, that would be a real good help for the short term and medium term, and a simple fix, because it's already working, don't break what's not already broken. That's unlikely to happen, but at least it's an option. The other options, as you're coming back to, is the mayoral forum, all the councils wanting to look with local mana whenua to amalgamate into some form of CCO together. But of course,
so this is for the Waikato area?
Just the Waikato region, correct?
Yeah.
But you've got 11 councils, and to get 11 councils who have got strengths and weaknesses in different areas, strengths and weaknesses of different issues, and to be all aligned at the same time, to amalgamate into a CCO at the same time, is a really big ask. And I think, personally, much as we love central government and any central government that's in, a little bit naive for them to expect that we can actually do that. It's more probably a snowball effect where 1, 2, or 3 councils get together and say, yes, we're ready and fit to do it, we can start that. And then there's a snowball effect with others, as they're ready, can then come on to a bigger idea that would work.
So, Jackie, you're talking about how it will work, and certainly it has to work. But also, one of the reasons the previous government's Three Waters scheme was set up, which got forgotten about in the co-governance debate, but was that they were trying to create entities that were big enough to raise finance. And Waikato District Council, you were saying before, 90,000 people. The number of ratepayers is a lot smaller. Are we actually big enough to raise that money that we need to go into the future with proper services?
Well, not on our own, and also there's parts of it why it costs so much. No, not on our own, but you see, as an example, so Hamilton has more ratepayers, and all of them are paying towards their waters. But then they have different issues around their debt ceiling, which we don't have the same issues around the debt ceiling.
Yes.
They're not metered, okay, for their waters, where we are metered in waters. So when you come into any partnership, it's a bit like it's hugely complex, okay? How I think of it is like when you're in a relationship with that, like you get in a partnership or get married, you have strengths and weaknesses within those marriages or relationships, and you work to the strengths of each and you support each other with their weaknesses. Right, and so you work through those solutions together as partners, and then to get a better outcome for the greater good. We all know in terms of the numbers from the Crowley report 5 or 6 years ago that amalgamating of 1, 2, 3, or 4 or 5 entities together gives us a lot of outcomes and lowers the increasing costs of compliance for the betterment. It's also better for the industry, etc. And so we know that works. It's just a matter of who you can partner up with and who you can actually amalgamate with. All of us want to take our waters off our balance sheet so that we can have a revenue raised debt. But at the end of the day, that's part of it. But raising debt means we've all still got to pay for it. It just means you pay for it over a longer period of time. And so it's a lower cost per year. But probably at the end of it, just like any mortgage, you actually pay a lot, just like any mortgage, right? You pay it off early, you pay less
over
a long time. It's more affordable. The other thing that comes into these waters, though, for us particularly, is that because we've got so many plants, the level of compliance, because when you've got a consent, it's 10 years or 15 years. When they're rolling over, we've got, I think, two or three or four consents that are rolling over within a 10-year period. Now, what happens with that is that as we've all aspired to have higher levels for the environment, the compliance cost of the new consents is huge. So it's like an exponential cost increase to upgrade the wastewater and potable water treatment plants to the new specifications. So, again, these are things like to be in compliance costs you twice as much money. Now, we want healthy waters, and we've got healthy waters, but if the standards get getting higher and higher, that just costs more money, okay? And how much affordability have we got? So it's about balancing what do the rules say, what do we need under 2, I've got the words.
Yeah, it's all right.
Waters, okay, so that's part of the problem. It's not just about what is in our small ratepayer base.
So,
it's
Jackie,
also about the compliance costs.
Can I ask, I know that one council, I think Whakatane District Council, said they literally won't be able to afford to meet compliance in the years to come. Are the councils, the mayors and councils, is there any chance that they're going to rebel en masse against the government instruction? Can they even do that?
Yeah, good question. We've actually discussed it. We've had that similar discussion and questions asked because, you know, we're looking at all options, right? And one of the councils brought up, well, what if we don't not compliant or we refuse to be compliant? But actually, you know, just come back a step. We get an independent, councils get an independent assessment of our financial status. And we're quite pleased that we've actually kept our AAA status for our financial status for our council. So we actually do good governance and good financial management of our district council. Not everybody, when they have that independent assessment, have kept those high ratings for credit. And why I'm saying that to you is showing that what we try to do is good governance. Good governance included we as local government should follow and must follow the laws of the land, which are set by central government. Basically, in brackets, whether we like it or not.
Now,
we can try and advise them and support them with better outcomes and help them to scope better decision-making, right, which is also what I'm really heavily into. Let's try and help them to make better decisions based on practical expertise that we've got into that. But to go against them is not something that we would mandate. And also, at the end of the day, when you've seen in different councils for different reasons, Tauranga would be an example, Kaipara would be another. When local government doesn't do what they're supposed to do and what they're mandated to do, then commissions can be brought in.
They get fired, yes. Yeah, you would get fired with all the council. Yeah, okay, all right. Well, that's that picture there. I want to move over just to a little bit about growth in Raglan and things like that. And I want to just give you a little story here, which is kind of a microcosm of how we feel in Raglan. One of our guys, John, has been talking to Future Proof about it's just an example, a corridor study on State Highway 23. And it's a relatively dangerous road, and we're due a lot of population growth. And they've basically come back and said, we've got much bigger population growth in the north of the district to worry about, so we're not doing anything about Raglan. And our feeling is that while we are a smaller population overall, the growth rate here is quite substantial. And we've got, I mean, I'm looking at plans for about 1,000 new sections to come online. And this is, so that's what, 2,500 people in a town that's currently 3,000 to 4,000 people. So we are looking at quite explosive growth. Now, you're not particularly in charge of Future Proof, but we are wanting something like a structure plan or some kind of plan. I know council has different types of plans they can do, and we feel like we're too far down on the list that towns which are not growing as much as us are ahead of us, and we would like to know that maybe in the next year's LTP that there's going to be money there for Raglan to do some serious planning, because we have some, as a percentage, we have some serious growth coming up on our community.
Yeah, and I guess, yes, I agree. I guess what you brought up is quite a few different topics, so I'm going to unpack a couple of things. I guess,
for sure.
We're in the economic downturn, and what I've actually changed one of our committees from strategy and finance to performance and strategy. Why I'm telling you that, then, listeners, is because I believe that our organisation, like any other, whether it's a business or a corporate, we've got slightly different legislative processes, but we still run as a business with high revenue input and output. And so the performance is understanding the environment of the economics, right? Now, so things like affordability come up, so we can have whatever we like, as long as us as ratepayers want to pay for it. Mm. But when we've got limited... what I'm trying to do and make sure is, and we're really focusing on this internally, is making sure the organisation is a lot more fit and healthy and also future-proof for the future, which is dynamic and complex and changing more rapidly in the future, AI, all the rest of it. This comes back to now, in the moment, we're in an economic downturn. However, we're going into potentially an upside of growth, right? Mm. And so the government's, even things now, the changing of inflation. So this comes down to, we can have structure plans or plans specific to all of our towns that are all experiencing that growth as much as we like. If we want to throw more consultants at it and throw more planners at it and have more capacity and charge you with the rates. So the performance is important overall for our whole district just to manage. I personally believe in what's happened in the past with when we've had economic downturns as the Waikato region as a whole in our district. We go into the slumps slower. We don't go in so deep, and we come out faster. Mm. Now, I'm trying to make sure that we track our performance as a whole district to make sure, one, that we have equity of managing and also good empirical information to base our decisions rather than the loudest voices or the ad hoc decision-making. We need to look at empirical information and what we've done, what we're going in the future, and what's likely to occur, so we can make the best decisions for all and have equity. And you're right, because we are in the middle of where we're all having growth across the whole district, and sometimes in places that we didn't plan growth, like Ahiniwe would be an example, with Sleepyhead, there's planned and unplanned. Raglan, obviously, you say it's also the housing that's going to be there now, which are probably about 30-40% is likely on today's stats to be non-occupier, right? Because there might be those people buy homes, but they might not necessarily live there all the time, because that's the stats at the moment. For Raglan,
sure. Yeah,
right? So you've got different things, but you are growing, but then Telfer's growing, the North is growing, Te Kawhata's growing, and around Tauwhiri, Tamahere, Manatang, that's another area that's growing at the same time, let alone some of our rural areas. So you're right, absolutely, we do need, because of the uniqueness of not just your growth, but also the fact that you're slam dunked in seasonality as well, we have to make sure that you're supported in terms of good planning. Some places, for example, Pocono's at about 5,000 people now, roughly.
I know, their growth is way bigger than ours, but
yeah, they haven't actually had a structured plan at all. So then, like Raglan, they've had some planning done, which is good, but they do need some bespoke planning done. Like we've done some roading planning for around your spatial planning, and also guidelines for extending your main street.
So can I just leap in, Jackie, because Pocono didn't have a structured plan, but they had I don't know the name of the plan, but they have had a plan about how they're going to rebuild their town centre, and which is being put into practice at the moment. I just don't know what it's just not called a structure plan.
No, they had a basic pulling together of the existing planned budget that was done in 3 weeks with two people from the community, and it didn't go out as a public document. And so they were just pulling together some of the infrastructure that was planned into a cohesive document. It wasn't actually like anything that went through in terms of an economic, social well-being or a roading plan. It's kind of bits and pieces all over the place to try and bring it into one place. But yeah, that's just an example. But like at the moment, like Taupuri and Taupuri, Narawahia, Hopuhopu, who've got that structure plan happening, there's a rollout of a different sort of plan for Huntly that also hasn't had a plan done. But this is more a socio-economic and well-being one because of just the specific needs of that area. And coming back to Raglan, it definitely will be supported. I think it's important that you've looked at and supported for the right planning, whatever it is. Let's call it structured planning, but it may not be able to be a bespoke version of what planning is needed for you at the time. And as you say, but there's also other places that need those things as well. It'll be a matter of prioritising it. And I think at the moment the thinking is for the RTP is it's not just like one person, then one, and then the next one. We'll probably try and do a couple at the same time because there'll be different bespoke versions of those things. Mm. Because at the moment, because we're gearing up for that growth, even though we might be in an economic downturn, I believe strongly as a mayor that we have to be absolutely, because to me the avalanche of growth is coming like an avalanche, like a big wave.
And, well, yeah. And
a little
of these...
bit of economic downturn is going to affect particularly Raglan in a significant way. So we need to make sure that with this relatively quiet time, even though it's hard to find the money to do it and the resources, we need to be absolutely planning that they're ready for managing that growth in a good, productive way for the better outcomes of places like Raglan and those other communities.
So can we say it's, like when you do their next LTP, that'll be looking, definitely spending 3 years ahead. Will we be in that, do you think?
Well, again, I can't guarantee anything because, there's got to go through, I only get one vote.
Of course,
but, yeah. And I guess the thing is, council's well aware, and I love this about you and Raglan, is you're very good at advocating for yourself and you're very well aware of your strategic view for forward, which is great because a lot of our communities need more of that acumen and we're trying to build up that resilience in them as well, right? So that's a great thing about you. So we're always clear about your needs and wants. But what we also need to do is balance that with those other paces and to kind of go, how can we manage what needs to happen and over which years, okay? But this year now, we're going to be working on, for this next 12 months, the next 2 years of the LTP, year two and year three, and then obviously into year four. And it's just coming back to what you said about the stats that you've got, by 2050, you'll have another 1,000 homes. And you
will have
a
lot. By then, we'll probably have more than that. The rate they're selling at the moment, I think they'll sell faster than that.
Yeah, and even if it's less, say even by 2030. So I know in Te Kauwhata and in the north, the same sort of thing, or even Taupuri, same thing. Those stats are happening faster than we thought. We're actually all over our district, we're above the fastest growing tracking line of population. So yes, it's top of mind, but also there's other areas. So this is just a matter of looking at them, assessing them, and then going, what can be done under the resources that council's got at the moment, and what comes first and second. But it doesn't mean it's not happening. And also what's coming out is also more stats from the Stats Department, which by the end of this year, where they're just getting the top-of-the-line stuff now, is by the end of the year, that information will actually help us with that information. So it's not like you're the poor cousin. And actually, if you look at some of the big infrastructure projects that have happened around Raglan and the planning to improve the way of life in terms of walkways, walk environment, Main Street, wastewater treatment plant work that's still continuing, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of infrastructure, time and resources of council's gone into Raglan, and then even the public transport. So definitely, as I said, you're the jewel in the crown. You have really unique needs and wants. You've got high growth as well as the tourism. So absolutely, those things are taken into consideration when we figure out who needs what where.
Okay. All right, let's move on to something else I want to talk about. I've got another little story I need to tell you that kind of illustrates the thing I want to talk about. And it just relates to a little bit of erosion across the walkbridge in Papahua here in Raglan. And we had in 2010, 2012, around that area, the bridge was changed and it removed. It effectively was the foot of the bridge was acting like a groin. And so in 2010, an engineer told regional council, so it's not you guys, that there would be no problems. But a local scientist here, who's an expert in this kind of thing, said, no, this is going to be a problem. And he was talking to the people at regional council at the time, but the person he was talking to, they got sick, and I think in the end they died. So that's a little bit sad. So 5 years later, the same scientist is recommending to a local organisation that we need to do something about it. And so they were getting in touch with, I've got I'll just summarise it. I've got a series of communications with people in the community to staff at Waikato District Council, some of whom I know and were very competent people, but they kept leaving. And so this is an issue that's still going today, and we're getting more and more of the inlet area eroded, where it's getting closer and closer to the road where the soccer fields are. And every time someone in the community tries to do something about it, they get in touch with someone at council, and then that person leaves the council. So what I want to talk about is staff turnover and the fact that, because that's a waste of our ratepayers' money, and also, you know, it's not good. We're looking at a new CEO sometime in the future. Can we? And I know this is just me making a suggestion to you, and you're the mayor, and you make the decisions. But can we create a culture in the council where people like working there and just want to stay? Because I know there's competition from other councils. Can we have a CEO who has a new vision? Because typically what would happen is they'll come in and a new CEO will do a restructure about how the power flows. But can we make it a place that people love to work and they just want to stay? Is that a possibility?
Okay, lots of things to unpack. A couple of things around your bridge and the groins and your expert this morning. Just you know, prepping for you, talking to you, Aaron, because I try. You know, I won't know everything in detail, but I am absolutely focused and interested in everywhere. But you know, you are important to us, and so you're really important to me, right? And I read that article around the groins and the bridge and the erosion. And I've actually put it into my file to go and talk to staff to go, look, this has been going on for, like, as you say, quite a few years, regional council and district council, and then there's this erosion effect of the pylons, and what are we, you know, what's happening with that project? So I glanced through it. I read that guy's name, which has gone right out of my head.
Shaw Mead is the scientist.
But in the groins and the bridge, okay. So I put that in my diary.
Cool.
Now,
that's nice.
Because I just read that. So I thought that was really interesting. Interesting that and where that project's at. Okay, that's part of it. In terms of like what we're trying to do in council is, and let's call it, I call it every time since I've been here, it's probably my 12th year there now, is the intellectual property. The capture of intellectual property of any organisation as people turn over is key, all right? And so we're doing a lot of work and have been doing a work for a couple of years now around making sure that we capture that intellectual property. So part of it is, what if that's a project, where is it at? Who's running it? If someone leaves, who picks it up, and how is it carried forward, so that everybody, whether it's you or any other 50,000 projects that we have going on and queries, how do we make sure that they're progressed? Or, hey, we can't progress this for another year. We've got to put it aside. There's a clear timeline or a clear understanding by both sides as to where they're at, right? And so that's a really good example to ask those questions, see how far we got on that sort of work. One, absolutely, the dynamics of that particular project, we need to go, who's looking after that and where is it at and what's the next step forward? Part of that is that we've got now we've actually just had our first meeting, is a district-wide resilience working group, which is regional council, district council.
Yep.
I've suggested strongly, and I think we put that in the terms of reference, that, and it's in Waikato Tainui than that, as a governance group for the whole of the district to oversee the different climate change effects, both Port Waikato, Raglan, but other areas as well that are happening now and will happen in the future. But I've suggested strongly that also that we should have a local representative for a local hapu or representative of each of those areas, as well as a local governance one. So, like, particularly as Port Waikato and Raglan, for example, at the moment, have got community boards. So I'm pretty sure that our terms of reference just discussed this week, that that will be part of it, so that when we have a governance group around these resilience, so these little projects can be brought up within the issues around Raglan, around whether it's the airfield erosion, whether it's there, or whether it's at Manu Bay, or whether it's out in the harbour, and how these things around the erosion, and start to tracking it, making sure we've got to put some cameras up to, which has happened at the port, just go look at it over time, and so the extent and things like that. So I believe that these things will be picked up within that governance group as operational matters to be highlighted.
Mm.
There's a process in there. In terms of the turnover of staff, our Waikato District Council staff, and okay, you know, COVID's a weird blow for everybody, pluses and minuses. Local government runs at about 17 to 18% turnover on average nationally, and we're roughly the same. I think we might have blipped up at 20% at one stage, but probably the same around COVID, same with everyone else. Our turnover of staff hasn't been any bigger or less than anyone else, but sometimes if people are dealing with particular people, they feel like they've lost that in that particular area. And this is why it's important, things like water space particularly, which is what you're talking about, or resilience, that we make sure that we've got that continuity. So So there's quite a lot of place, but this also comes back to if someone does leave for whatever reason, or, you know, maternity leave, or they go overseas, or they, not necessarily because they don't like the place, we haven't got a good culture. Lots of reasons why people leave, or they want to get, you know, ahead somewhere, all sorts of things, or their partner leaves and goes and gets a job somewhere else. Lots of reasons people leave, is that we make sure that those projects are picked up. So that comes back to that thing, is where is that project at, and how do we progress it in a timely way? And if we don't have the resources to do it, and then we have to prioritise the priorities of the projects of Raglan, that your community board are well aware of what that priority is, and so that everyone's clear, right? Because we can't do everything for everybody across the whole district in a fair and equitable way unless we throw a hell of a lot more resources and stuff, right? And it's particularly if we're really trying to make sure that we don't have, you know, overuse too many more people and don't spend too much more money because we're in a cost of living crisis, we have to prioritise those things. But everyone's clear about those things, and then we can make sure we haven't forgotten them, but we make sure that everyone's clear about the communication. That's, I think, a more adult way of doing it. That's the sort of stuff that we're working on. So that's something that, in terms of the chief executive, we've actually this week also just had on, was public excluded, so I can't really go into much detail, but I asked as a mayor, going back to the internal mechanisms of our council, that we give an overview to our councillors of how operationally our council works, the project that the IT have been doing, you know, a little bit of touching on how does, you know, AI might impact our business in the future. And just like, because we always talk about towns or outcomes or projects or capital, we don't actually talk about the mechanics of the business that actually makes these things happen. We had a big overview in that. We also talked about the staffing levels. And actually, how I understand it is actually our staff and the culture is actually really above the average of the nationally. And this is the feedback from staff back into a survey.
Okay.
Because we track that also. So the culture, we're really strong in building strong culture that gives people flexibility but gives them a sense of belonging, but also asking them to spread their wings in terms of their acumen and their expertise and make that collective bigger than their jobs and to look for things that they can do better. Our council sort of raised our risk level a little bit. I mean, I'm saying, like, you know, if we had a risk appetite of 4, we might have raised it to 4.5. But we're showing that, although we're not risky, because that's not our job to be risky like an entrepreneur, we do want to look at trialing things and looking outside the square and saying, how can we do things better, faster, more efficiently? And you have to therefore think outside the square, and that's kind of like an idea of risk. So there's lots of pieces that are moving towards staff feeling more self-actualised, feeling like they're part of a bigger picture, us making ourselves future-proof for it, realising we're already complex our society's complex, and we have to be more adaptive and vigilant to that complexity, and that's what we're doing at the same time. So I think the staff at the moment are feeling really good, and we've had a lot of, you know, having a lot more diversity of staff, which has also been one of our key focuses, because diversity, whether it's cultural, age, culture, ethnicity, faith, or, you know, and acumen, helps to us in better decision making. We know that, and so that's been a really good positive thing that's happening as well.
Okay, all right. Now there was just one other thing I wanted to add. I relates to the growth issue. I just ran into people from the kids soccer club yesterday at an event I was at, and this is just an example of growth. 5 years ago they had 200 kids. Now this year they've got 290 kids playing soccer. So that's an example of the big growth. I think it's already happening, because we're talking about future, but it's already happening. And they're a particular club. They don't have their own. They have fields they play on, but it's not a dedicated place. And there's all sorts of issues around there. So I think they were keen that you would hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, there's a couple of things on that. It's kind of like I'm really pleased with the work. I've been to like 3 or 4 in this last year, which, I mean, I love going to things where we actually make stuff happen. We do a lot of talking and planning, but when we actually make stuff happen and actually turn the lights on. But coming out play fields, what we've done is, like, it's expensive to buy more playing fields, right, and to run them. But if we put lights on them, which is quite expensive, I mean, it's $500,000 I think we spent at Patterson Park in Narawaya for $450,000. But by putting lights on and then putting really good electrics in, which means that, like, a band can come and play in the middle of the day there, we actually doubled the capacity, you know, because then they can go into like 10 o'clock at night kind of idea. And so that's the way of using smart money. So in terms of Raglan, to say, like, this sort of thing, we're great that we're getting our children into sport, but then are we making sure that in Raglan as well that we've got lights on all the fields so that we get better capacity out of them? Because that would be smart use of the money to do that. The other thing I noticed that's happening across the district is I'd say this love to all the rugby union fans out there, like my husband, but rugby league is like the bomb, and soccer. And there seems to be a real move away from the union in our district that I've seen towards soccer and, which I think people call it football, is it? And league.
Some prefer now, that,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so I guess the question would be, in Raglan, is there the fact that there's more people playing those three sports that would be played on the same field, and therefore it's an issue of more capacity, so there's a 50% increase overall? Or is there a movement away from what was traditionally that might have played 5 years ago to another, so that the numbers haven't necessarily changed?
Oh, definitely overall the numbers have increased across the kids for
combined. Have they increased? Yeah, but so what you're saying is, like, there's a 50% increase in the youth in soccer, but has there been a 30% decrease in this or that? You know,
no, there hasn't. Also, not for Raglan, for the rugby. There's like in the league. You mentioned the league. The league is actually exploding here at the moment. So
exactly. Yeah. Same with rugby. Yeah. But and where's the rugby union? Because another year the rugby union's a lot quieter, but the other's got. So yeah, absolutely that growth. Have we got a capacity issue on our fields? Do we need to look at buying more fields or not? Or can we make better utilisation with them by putting lights on them? Those are the sorts of things that the outdoor space is looking at all the time. Yeah. There's another piece of work that fits into that where we can't keep going and buying more land. One, that's not necessarily available, and two, we can't afford it because we can't pay, you know, premium prices because we're ratepayer money, right? We're not like a developer who's got maybe a bit more money that they can spend on these things. So it's hard to find land in the first place that's suitable and the price that we can afford, let alone the affordability in the LTP. But we've got, I think, about 1,600 or 1,800 pieces of land that the Waikato District Council manages. And what we've got, this is a strategic piece. We're probably about three quarters of the way through the property department to analyse these pieces of land, which is a huge ask, to say that we can see over the whole district what are strategic pieces of land that we want and we've got and we want to keep. What are pieces that we don't need absolutely and we want to sell? Because if we can sell stuff, then we can then add to the income to buy things that we want to do. And what pieces are missing, right, of that strategic, which comes back to what you say, maybe we need some support, both from Sport Waikato around supporting that amazing club with their growth with the kids and how to manage them on a day-to-day basis, but also other resources in the open spaces, whether it's fields or equipment.
We do have
them in those areas as well.
We do have land out here in the form of the Wainui Reserve, which has been looked at. So, for that specific issue,
And also, and then if you can put lights on, that's good. So, they're actually the good things, and I'm sure. And I think, you know, like, I know that your community board are really focused on this sort of stuff, and have a really good message with the council, good relationship with us, let alone or your club. So, open spaces are open to finding out what's going on, bringing in other people and community facilities people and or people like Sport Waikato to make sure what's happening, they can be supported with that growth. But also this piece of work around the strategic use of all of our property, whether we can buy and sell, let go, we may have more income if we need to in the future, because we do, as you say, future-proof Raglan like everywhere else for where do we next maybe need fields or whatever, right? Or what is the next big thing that's going to cost millions of dollars that Raglan will need and overall other places as well, so that we're actually not behind the eight ball in terms of the right infrastructure fit for purpose for thriving communities.
Well, look, Jackie, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. I've got another interview about to start, and I'm sure you've got more important things to do than talking to me. So I'll let you go now, and I just want to thank you for your time this morning and for being available for us.
Yeah, no, same. Thank you so much for your time and energy. Aaron, you did an amazing job.
Thanks so much.